This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
Jay Buhner just punched me in the kidney.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines studio.
On Seattle Sports.
We're going to do you on the interview.
Doesn't really work that way, Sherm. This is a show that has my name on it.
It kind of does, though.
Brought to you by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Hello!
Show Seattle Sports 710, seattlesports.com, Seattle Sports app, and the podcast platforms. More, you'll know that I did wear some athletic pants today so that I could be stretching throughout the morning. It's going to be a full day of hyper hydrating. I've got my mason jar for water. I got a little bit of cucumber in there to make it taste good because the water out of our filter here doesn't taste that great. And then I've got my pants on today specifically.
You act like you're preparing for gymnastics routine or something with all this stretching that you think you need to do for.
Well, I don't want to get hurt. It's that simple.
I know, but it's mostly you need to stretch like day of the race.
Yeah, well, I'm going to do that, but it's leading. What, you think I'm going to stop
stretching
tomorrow?
I don't know how much the stretching you did last week is that big of a deal.
It's just getting me flexible. It's getting me ready. All of the stretching.
That's what I'm saying. You don't need to be that flexible. It's not a gymnastics routine.
Well, you do if you don't want to hurt your hamstrings.
You just need to be like warmed up before you run.
Just trying to get in your head, Salk. Do your thing.
It's okay. See, the thing is, I feel so confident in the win. I just need to make sure I don't get hurt. So I'm just doing the one thing I know that is most important. I don't need to pull up lame with a bad hamstring. So I'm doing the one thing. Avery is leaving today, which was very sad. Again, for like the second time in 3 weeks, Avery is leaving to go to a camp with her school. And I'm like furious about it. That's enough. No more kids leaving my house. I'm out. But last thing she said to me before she went to bed last night. Hope you beat Moore in that race, which
was
super nice. Yeah,
I thought Avery and I were cooler than that.
I thought you were too, but I guess not. She was rooting for Dad, which is pretty cool. All right, that's where I'm at. I'm getting ready. I'm feeling pretty confident. I'm feeling pretty good. The hamstrings are getting loose, and victory shall be mine by tomorrow about midday. Last night, victory was the Mariners, thanks to...
Has not homered yet, 1-0. Oh, swinging a high fly ball out to left field. Number one is sailing away. How far? Midway up the second deck. Julio's first in 2024 is loud. A two-run bomb, truly. And it's 4-0 Mariners.
Yeah, that was the call on our station here in Seattle Sports. You know what I meant to ask you is we should go back and listen to the call on Root because I'm curious if Blauer's given, oh boy. When that one went out, because that was an immediate, no doubt, see you later, goodbye, home run, first of the year for Julio. The moment he hit it, anyone within a mile radius who could have heard it, seen it, smelled it, whatever, knew that that ball was going to be gone, and it sure was. Longest and hardest hit ball the Mariners have had all year. It was like he unleashed 3.5 weeks of frustration on one poor little baseball that went flying out of that park there in Texas. Just an awesome piece of hitting by Julio, which was great. And the Mariners do their thing. They just kind of, you know, keep winning, right? Just another day where the Mariners pitch well and hit well and score a couple runs and play really good defense.
It means so much more against the Rangers than the Rockies.
Isn't it more fun? Yeah, it is a little bit more fun against the mighty Rangers, who, of course, won the World Series last year. And you hold that lineup scoreless and you hit your home runs and they don't. And you play good defense, and they make not an error necessarily at first base, but a play that probably could have been made differently. And those things all help you, and your formula works to perfection. Remember, I'm going to keep talking about this throughout the year because I think it's important. When you add J.P. Crawford getting on base, Julio Rodriguez being Julio, and starting pitching being dominant, you're going to win a lot of baseball games. Well, let's take a look at how they won last night. JP on base for both of those home runs. Julio hit one of them.
Actually, it was just one of them.
Oh, you're right. He was only on base for one of them. You're right. Okay. He was on base for one of the two home runs. So add Cal into that mix, and those guys end up scoring three of the four runs on the day. And then you obviously get tremendous starting pitching as Logan Gilbert goes deep into the game, 6 2/3, doesn't allow a run, and you shut out the Rangers. That's the formula, and I'm going to keep playing this song. I know that I like to find a song generally for a team that fits them, and often we've been accused of using those songs because they, you know, represent like the excitement, and I don't want to do that this year because sometimes it feels like once we create a song for something, it ends up kind of backfiring. So this is not that. This is not a, there's something happening here. This is not a, you know, oh my gosh, the Mariners are now a World Series. This is not that. Again, we're only, what, 23 games into the season?
This is just Mike Salk thinking in song, as always.
No, this is just when the formula works, when the formula is successful, let's pay tribute to the formula. With
high
DOC.
Energy, full with the wisdom, sense of a rich man, knowledge and the rhythm. This is what I'm using to come up with a style, so I'll interact together better with the crowd. Nervous for a second and the record starts spinning and I fall into the state of mind of what I've just created.
You gotta be a little like old school to know the song. That's DOC, who died tragically. One of the early pioneers of West Coast rap. And this is the formula.
I get where you're going with it.
You like it? It's got a nice vibe to it too.
I'm embarrassed every time you play one of these songs that I don't know. I'm like,
you don't know the roots, man. That's your problem.
I know.
You think that music started
like 1998?
Yeah. It was a few years before that. A couple of years before 1998. It also had music. Anyway, that's the formula, right? Julio is Julio. JP gets on base. Logan Gilbert in this case, but any of your five starters do their thing and keep you in the game, or in this case, dominate the game. And then add in like one other thing and you're good to go. Last night, you added two other things. You added Cal Raleigh hitting another home run. He's the best hitting catcher in baseball right now. We were talking a little bit about that yesterday, and I know, Justin, you were mentioning that this Adley Rutschman stuff right now seems totally overblown compared to what Cal has done. He's got more home runs than any other catcher since the beginning of last year, by far.
Yeah.
And then throw in like one other thing. Okay, this time it was Josh Rojas. Gets on base, which he's been doing all year. His defense made a slick play at third base to get them out of an inning. Yeah, all right. You just got to add in like one or two other things around the formula. Maybe one night it's Mitch Haniger going deep. Maybe one night it's Mitch Garver coming up with a big hit. Maybe one night it's somebody you're not expecting. Maybe it's Arias. You just add one more thing to the equation, and you're probably going to have a lot of success this year. So kudos to the Mariners. That's what they needed to do. They guarantee that they don't get swept in Texas. And now you got a chance with Bryce Miller and then Luis Castillo to take a series. And by the way, didn't they not win a single game in that building last year?
They're 0-8.
They didn't win a game there.
Yeah.
Okay, so you show up this year and you win. And for Morosi and for Passan and for everybody else who's been saying, hey, this is your chance to take advantage of the Rangers before they're 100%. Great. They're not 100%. I agree. I get it. This is not necessarily the Rangers team you're going to see at the end of the year. Yeah, they're missing their two old pitchers. I mean, like, I feel a little, like, weird being like, ah, oh, well, you know, they're just kind of missing DeGrom and Scherzer. Well, no kidding. DeGrom's been hurt every year since forever, and Scherzer's 1,000 years old. He's like Methuselah. So, like, the fact that those two guys are hurt... Yeah, no kidding. You don't really get, like, credit on that one. But Josh Jung, I'll give you. Like, that guy is a serious threat at third base. He makes them much better. He's one of those guys. I am terrified whenever he's up, whenever he's looming. And so that's obviously a big piece of their team that they're missing. You're missing Matt Brash. You're missing Gregory Santos. Does that equate? I don't know. Maybe not. But it might tonight. Right. The one problem with last night's game is you end up using all of your leverage relievers. Had to use Stanek, unfortunately, to get out of the seventh. And then you got to use both Spire and then finally Munoz because you didn't add on. You really needed to score five or more runs last night to allow you to use some of the other relievers. But OK, fine. It didn't go that way. Stanek's still probably available tonight, having only had to go one batter last night. That would be my guess. And maybe you can use one of those other guys as well, depending on the situation. But, like, yeah, it would be helpful to have another team of leverage relievers like Brash and Santos to be able to go to. All right, fine. That I don't know if that evens out to Josh Jung, but what you're doing is finding ways to beat a Rangers team right now when you have the opportunity to do so. Good. You couldn't do that last year. And right now, you're playing some pretty good baseball over the course of the last seven games or so, both offensively and defensively and pitching-wise. Total package. I picked that, up. You know what that is, Justin? You know what you call that right there?
The formula?
What is that, Dre?
It's the formula.
There you go. Dre knows. Just ask Dre.
You guys are such dorks.
It's the formula, Maura. It is the formula for driving you crazy and getting you off your game before the big race tomorrow. We'll come back with everything you need to know. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Call it a formula, call it a recipe, but anytime JP, Julio, and the starting pitching all come together, it's going to work very, very well. It's going to taste even a little bit better when Cal Raleigh gets involved, which is what he did last night.
And here she comes. It is on the way and it's flying toward home, swinging a fly ball into right field and deep. Garcia going back, looking up, and goodbye baseball. Into the lower deck in right field. Hot hitting Cal Raleigh with his sixth home run of the season, and it puts the Mariners on top 2-0 here in the top of the first inning.
Yeah, that's helpful. JP on base a couple times yesterday. Julio hits a bomb, and then you know what you do? You just let Logan Gilbert take it from there.
Gilbert comes home with the pitch. Strike three called. 96, a touch off the plate. He gets the call, and Langford ends the inning. Third punch out for Gilbert. He strands the double.
Yeah, Logan was great. Went 6 2/3. Once again, did not allow a run despite really not having great command. A few more walks than you're accustomed to seeing. But what's great about the way he keeps developing is if one thing's not working, just like we were talking about with Bryce Miller, he's got some other options. And last night it was the cutter.
Yeah, it helps out a lot. I don't think we used it in spring training much against him. So it was kind of there today when we needed it. We went to it a lot and I think it helped out, kind of gave it a different look, something moving into them to lefties. A lot of my stuff's north-south, so, you know, I felt like it was working. We just kept going to it.
It really is amazing the way some of these guys, it's like they've so mastered what their mechanics are that just adding another pitch really seems to go almost seamlessly for every starter on this rotation. I mean, obviously Castillo already had them all, but in the last couple of years, Kirby, Gilbert, and Miller, and we'll wait and see when Brian Wu gets out here soon. They just keep like, yeah, you know what? I think I'll throw in a cutter. Eh, maybe I'll just throw in a splitter. Eh, maybe I'll just throw in a sinker. Eh, maybe I'll just do this. And when you have that good a command of your own mechanics, you can add pitches like that and see the success that they're able to have with it. It's really been just an incredible run that they're on. They just keep going out there with quality starts time after time after time. You throw in a little good work from Stanek, Spire, Munoz, and you've got 3 games out of 4 in which your team has allowed 0 runs in regulation. That's pretty incredible. They've now allowed a total of 6 runs in their last 7 games. Think about that. They've allowed 6 runs in their last 7 games. They've also taken over first place because they've won 6 out of 7, and they've won 8 out of 11. It's a good thing Scott didn't panic at the beginning of this year. By the way, the only real bummer, as I mentioned, not getting to add on when you had a chance. Would have been nice not to have to use all of your top leverage relievers in Game 1 of the series. Well, they'll get it going back again tonight. Bryce Miller on the hill looking for the series win.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Right, draft is tomorrow. Popular options for the Seahawks, I would say. Faltano, Penix, one of the 3 biggest defenders in this one, meaning Verse, Latu, or Murphy, or trade down, right? I mean, those seem to be sort of the 3 or 4 best or most commonly mocked options to the Seahawks. So what about the quarterback? Could they draft one at number 16, Mark Dominic? Joined us yesterday.
I think they're still, you guys are big time sleepers at the quarterback spot. I think they're the sleeper team that's just being quiet and maybe make a move. I know that's not usually what John does, but I think he's one of those ones that, you know, makes a move and puts himself in position to go get the quarterback. So I think, you know, when you see these quarterbacks fall, what could they do with it? I think that's one, the one thing I would sit there and look at.
Well, okay, so it just kind of keeps complicating it, right? Like, is that truly going to be an option for them? If it is, then and maybe one of those guys will be available. We'll wait and see. If not, if all those guys get drafted early, it should continue to push really good players down the board. Maybe that means Faltano. Maybe it means Byron Murphy. Mark Dominic doesn't think he's going to be there, but
I think he's a stud. I love this player. I think he's got quick twitch. He's got different rush moves. He certainly can beat you inside on one-on-ones, but he's also able to get small and skinny and split double teams and create a lot of problems. You know, it's interesting. I always felt like this league has never valued TFLs the way it should. TFLs are sacks. And until we start to look at TFLs as the same as sacks and start to like really, you know, support that, I think this guy's a TFL monster, and I think he can be a good sacker. I think he's going to go, though. I think he's the first defensive player off the board.
I love the idea of finding something that is underrated or undervalued in the league and trying to take advantage of it. I don't know if he's my number one choice for the Seahawks, but I certainly wouldn't be mad if Byron Murphy is a guy we're talking to on Friday morning.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Yeah, pretty cool. Caitlin Clark going to continue her association with Nike, signing a $28 million contract that will span 8 years and includes a signature shoe. Her initial name, image and likeness deal, which she signed in 2022, expired at the end of this college season. Just a fantastic story, and now sets her up with the kind of wealth that feels right on point for everything she's done for her game, etc., and the money she's starting to make for people around her. She just deserves it more and more. Very curious to see what other products she endorses now. How will her brand evolve? It's a very interesting spot to be in where she controls quite a bit of power and influence now moving forward. Is that a good thing? Well, Tom Brady was talking about some of the problems with today's young athletes. Here's what Brady had to say.
I think the biggest problem with a lot of kids these days, all about them. It's all about them, their brand, their social media. And then when it's about me and then not about us, well, there's no way to succeed as a team if all you're doing is thinking about how selfish it is for you to get attention.
It's cool to show the world how great you are, but the most inspiring thing is how great you can make others.
That's the point of life, is what we could do. How do you help other people finish the race, not just you?
Interesting. I'm not accustomed to hearing Brady curse like that. Maybe he's trying to be edgy. Huh?
Threw me off.
I was trying to be edgy for his Fox gig next year or something, but that's why he and Brock are both always cursing teammates like that, Fox guys. I know there are a lot of people throwing shade back at Brady being like, well, you created TB12. Yeah, after he'd been in the league for a decade. Tom Brady in the early years refused to even take endorsements. And as Moore and I were talking about yesterday, the first one he did with Visa, he brought his entire offensive line with him to capitalize on the success and the attention that he was getting at that point. No, I think Brady is a pretty good model for how to handle it. Now, those days are gone. I appreciate you, Tom, and appreciate that that's what you were trying to do. With name, image, and likeness and everything that these guys have now coming up through college, going to be very hard to eliminate some of that branding. And now in Caitlin Clark's case, she's got to capitalize. Unfortunately for her, the amount of money available to her in the league she chooses to play in, it's just not nearly what it would be for Tom Brady. She got to capitalize. That's about your family. That's about your own personal ability to change your life. She got to do everything she can to capitalize right now today. That's everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour. And by the way, I would bet that he would be, I don't know, he wasn't asked specifically about her. That comment he makes is sort of, I think, about young athletes in general. I don't think he's specifically, I bet you if you asked him about Caitlin Clark, he'd be like, yeah, she should take advantage. She should absolutely sign the biggest deal she could possibly sign right now. Take advantage of this and try to continue to open up the market if she has success, not just for her, but for other women in sports. If this $28 million deal pays off for Nike, what's it going to do for, you know, whoever it is next year?
Kid, yeah.
Paige Beckers or eventually the girl at USC. I mean, like, there are so many options down the road, or maybe not just basketball, maybe other sports. Yeah, she's a trailblazer in that regard.
We do have one more thing you need to know. I think Justin has it.
Oh, Pete Thamel's reporting that Reggie Bush is getting his 2005 Heisman Trophy back.
Oh, that's so nice.
A formal reinstatement of the trophy coming today.
Oh, a formal reinstatement.
Yeah.
So they waited for OJ to die on that?
The Heisman Trust calls, quote, enormous changes in the college football landscape. So I'm assuming all that is happening.
So do you think they basically were like, look, OJ just died, and people are like, this freaking guy still had his Heisman Trophy, and Reggie Bush does not?
I don't think so, because they were really tone deaf in like their post about him after. But I think they're like, now all these kids are making money, and it's really not that big of a deal anymore.
That
deal that Reggie Bush got a little bit of money back in the day.
Maybe, right? That his mom got a car, whatever the heck it was.
Bills, right.
All right, good stuff. All right, thank you for that. Good, thanks for adding in. All right, coming up, Mark Dominic. I just played you a little sound from him. He was great yesterday. Some really good insight as to some of the top potential Seahawks in this draft. And a skill that John Schneider has that no one ever really talks about. It's next on Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Weekdays 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Thursday's draft day. Thursday's race day. Obviously, you know that as well. Moore and I are getting ready for the big battle. Sounds like our location is all set. We're working on some of the filming. We do have to figure out a starter's pistol and some tape. So we'll have a little meeting after the show so we know exactly what we're doing. Brock, where do you plan to be for the race here?
At the finish.
You're going to stand at the finish.
Yeah, I guess so. Or maybe I'll start you and then I'll sprint kind of across adjacent kind of across the field. Across the field. Yeah. That's probably what I'll do.
Okay.
I'll probably start, sprint across.
Places.
I got to be involved in some way. I got to get my heart rate up.
Yes.
A little bit,
yes. Brock's going to be so mad that other people are racing and he doesn't get to be a part of it. All he wants to do is race himself. Mm. All right. Well, after our stupid race, the Seahawks will finally get to figure out what they do at number 16. And to help us talk through that draft, Mark Dominic, former Bucks GM, of course, and now with SiriusXM. And it's been way too long since he's been on this show. Mark, thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Yeah, glad to be on. Can't believe we're that close to the finish line or the beginning line of the draft, which, again, just seems like it sneaks up every year, but it's going to be an exciting weekend, that's for sure.
When you were doing this for the Bucks, as you were 2 days out, did you feel at that point like, all right, I kind of know what I'm doing here? Like, I know everything. These last couple of days are unnecessary. Or are you just sort of still scrambling like, well, I got to get a few more evaluations done. I got to know a few more scenarios. I got to set up a few more trades. What is that like?
Yeah, so it's really, you pretty much have a good sense of what you're going to do round one, round two. After that, you really don't. Depending on where your pick is in round two. And you don't have to worry about it, right? Because we have, Friday to, kind of get everything resettled after Thursday night's first round. But you definitely have a game plan in mind. I think right now what you're doing is just kind of reconfirming, if I want to trade here, this is what I'd be willing to give up. If I want to make a move back, this is what I'd be willing to take. And doing it with a sound mind instead of trying to think about it like two picks before your draft or on the clock and suddenly the Dallas Cowboys call, what are you going to do? Like, no, it's like, I already thought about this, and this is what I'm going to do, and this is what we're going to do, and this is the plan. And then you lay it out in front of the ownership as well. A lot of times this is when they would just kind of want to get an overall sense of, like, what's the problem? What are you thinking about? That kind of things. But it's mainly the haze in the barn, and if you're tweaking something, it's very minimal.
Mark, you think this will look and feel any different to any of us being the first draft without Pete Carroll next to John Schneider?
Yeah, right. It's certainly going to be a different feel and a different look. I mean, it's a tandem that has been together for such a long time and had wonderful success. And yet I have complete confidence in John Schneider, known him forever. I know you guys know him very well, too. He's a fantastic listener, and I think that makes a very good GM. And that's what John does well. So I'm looking forward to seeing this one with Coach McDonald and bringing his mentality from Baltimore, which has done a great job of drafting over the years, too. If you look at just their first round success, it's been significant, and which has kept them very relevant every year as well. So it'll be a nice combination to see these two working together.
I'm so glad you use that word listener. And I want to follow up on a little bit. What does that mean? And especially, like, how does that play its way out in the draft room? And especially in working with a new coach where you've got to get players that fit what it is he's looking for. How does that play its way out?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think you're nailing it with a new coach and, staff included, for the most part. And so what you want to do as a GM right now is you just need to direct them and talk to them about, like, what does each position look like? Tell me why. Why is Kyle Hamilton a good pick for you guys? I know he was taller, he didn't run as fast, but what was it about Kyle that you liked about his game? But take me through your offense, take me through your defense. And now the hard thing you have to do is you have to sit there and say, hey, look, you're going to build this, let's go defense because it's Coach McDonald. You're going to build this defense from scratch and you've got 11 players. All right, and I'm going to give you a nickel corner because I think nickel corners are that important. So you got 11 players, so it's going to take probably one linebacker off the field, or maybe I'll give you 12 players. You can have the nickel corner. Let's do it that way. And so now I want you to rank what's the number, if you could pick one player on the entire defense that you had to have, what positions he played, and go through that through 1 through 12. And that way I know that maybe strong safety and Sam backer, or depending on your scheme, maybe when you're inside backers isn't as important, or maybe your defensive, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And it's hard, right? They have to sit there and tell you, like, what's most important. And then what you do, once you see that, because that's going to help you make decisions on draft day, and then you kind of look at what your club looks like. You have a conversation about the players. Oh, you say that this guy could kind of fit into that mold. Do you mean that Boye Mafe is kind of the outside linebacker you're looking for, or are you still looking for more of the Daryl Taylor? What do you want? And then you have to break down the traits within that player. And this is why you have to listen. You have to be willing to ask all these questions to get a sense, because when you're in the fifth round, yeah, we all might want another corner. and we don't want to sacrifice size. So we're going to sacrifice speed and maybe some shorter quickness, but we're not going to sacrifice a 5'8" guy. We're always going to go 6'1". And so you just listen to those things and take it all in as you learn what this new coach wants and in this new system that they want.
He is Mark Dominic, former Bucks GM, now on Sirius Radio, NFL Radio. You'll hear him all over this draft as well. So knowing that and listening to everything you said right there, here's a little bit of the Ravens way. Here's a little bit of John Schneider's way. They blend those two things together. Give me a couple players that you think fit both of those molds pretty darn well in this draft.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's still, you guys are big time sleepers at the quarterback spot. I'm sure you probably talk about it all the time in terms of who might be the quarterback for your Seattle Seahawks. I think they're the sleeper team that's just, you know, being quiet and maybe make a move. I know that's not usually what John does, but I think he's one of those ones that, you know, makes a move and puts himself in position to go get the quarterback. So I think, you know, when you see these quarterbacks fall, you know, what could they do with it? I think that's one thing I would sit there and look at. I think that there's a lot of different guys that you could go towards, but I think that they're going to sit there and look at the secondary of this football team and know that Devon Witherspoon has been so good and so productive. That's been really impressive. And so when you see all those things with what they've already got, I think that they're going to continue to focus on offensive line. They'll continue to focus on the secondary, and I think that's going to be the two areas you're going to see them do it.
Well, since you mentioned quarterback, and as you know, we are sports radio hosts. You just essentially dangled catnip in front of our noses by mentioning the quarterback position. We probably spent more time in our 15 years on the air together talking right about that than anything else or any 10 other subjects combined. Mark, let's talk about these quarterbacks. And if you believe there is one, I remember John telling us years ago, he's only drafted two quarterbacks here in Seattle, Russell Wilson and Alex Magoo. And he told us years ago, he's looking for a quarterback that tilts the field, that tilts the room, that has a presence that changes everything for a franchise. Who in this draft changes everything for a franchise?
Yeah, these quarterbacks, you got to swing and try to hit. And, you know, you've got the Caleb Williams, the Drake Mays, the Jaden Daniels, who are, you know, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May. I think JJ McCarthy does go in front of Michael Penix, and I think Michael's the fifth guy. And then I think you're talking about Bo Nix, does he sneak in here or does he not? And my gut instinct is, I don't think he goes in the first round, but it's going to be close. There's so many good players at other positions that it's going to be hard to do this. But I think that this is where, as you guys know, when you're playing in the division and you're looking at that position, I think the best way I can explain it is when I was in Tampa, we drafted a young quarterback named Josh Freeman, who was supremely talented, on the field and kind of fell a little bit off the field. That's kind of hurt his career. But even though I had a young quarterback who had great numbers his second year, like fabulous NFL numbers, I still had to beat Drew Brees, Cam Newton, and Matt Ryan, right? And so it's like, I realized that I still have probably the fourth best quarterback in our division, and that's really brutal. And so when you look at where Seattle is, it doesn't mean anything against Geno. It's just the fact that, hey, look, we might have the fourth best quarterback in this division, and we've got to swing at it. And, you know, you might not be picking 16 next year or in that kind of spot. So I think that that's going to be where I think that they're going to let the draft come to them. I don't think they're going to go make the move to go get it, but I certainly think that they're sleepers with those two fours or maybe that third where they can go make a move. But I think you could take any one of those five and make a case for them being a franchise opportunity for your football team.
You think all of the background that Ryan Grubb has, Scott Huff has, the OC, the O-line coach, they were just with Penix the last couple of years. Do you think that gives them an inherent advantage in the evaluation?
Yeah, I think it does. Just like I think it's interesting for Harbaugh to have John Alt, right? And like he knows that kid inside and out and everything about him. And so I think it's the same thing. I think it's very helpful. When you bring in coaches from the college ranks, basically even more so over this last year versus any other time with the NIL and the portal, these guys know so many players and so much background. They are a wealth. They're like even more probably deeper into these players than even the college scouts who've been sitting there for all year watching them. These guys know them and lived with them. So I think it's definitely going to sway, and that's where you've got to listen. That's where John Schneider's got to get a sense of, you know, is Penix the guy that we think – because it's all about the health for Penix, right? I mean, it depends if you can – you like left-handed quarterbacks. That's a separate argument.
I do. I love them.
Yeah, Brock's kind of a fan for whatever reason.
I was going to say, yes. Might be a fan. I love him. But – You know, John, so I was with Coach Gruden. Coach Gruden hated left-handed quarterbacks,
yeah,
right? So
sense,
it's just,
yeah.
So it was ugly. It was a bad match. funny, but I mean, for Michael Penix, I mean, you just got to get over the medical, and what your doctors tell you about that is basically going to be how you handle him. And so if Michael Penix is a guy that you feel like can play in the National League because your doctors who you hired say, hey, look, we think he's going to be fine, boom, you could take him there. If not, then, you know, because of all the season injuries. And I loved the letter that Michael Penix penned. I thought that was really smart by him to kind of put it out there and say, I don't know what else to do other than let's go. So I think that's going to be interesting. But, you know, I think that Michael's a really good player, but I think having that knowledge from those college coaches is a big piece of the puzzle here.
Can you help out my poor friend Brock, because he should love Michael Penix.
I should.
He should be leading the train in favor of a left-handed UW quarterback. Mm-hmm. This should be the most obvious thing in the world, and I don't think it's the medicals for Brock. I don't think it's the issues.
It's not looking back. It's projecting ahead.
It's trying to figure out what that body looks like in the NFL.
I just have concerns about the sustainability and the durability, those abilities. Nothing with the arm, nothing with the brain, nothing with the talent, nothing with the accuracy. All of it is franchise worthy. I just have a question about not even the past injuries, Mark, but just projecting. Can you remember guys in your years where it wasn't even their past injuries, it was projecting ahead and going, geez, I just don't know if this body type can sustain the kind of beating you're going to take in the NFL.
I think you think about that. Yeah, I think you think about that a lot. I know I did or do think about that a lot in terms of, you know, can you take the player that you're worried is going to get hit? You got to say the past has to mean something or there's no reason to talk about it. And I think that's where, you know, as you know, Brock, that, you know, with Penix, it's a lot easier not being the team that picks him and go, well, yeah, take him. Of course you would. And then something goes wrong, right? Because you're the one getting fired. And so it's a little bit different to be on the sideline saying, yeah, well, you definitely take this guy. He's got everything. You have to be comfortable. And Penix used to be able to run and things like that. And now he's a pocket passer. And, you know, does he have awareness in the pocket? I think so. But I do think that it's fair for you to sit there and say, you know, there should be some bit of pause, some bit of like, you know, the past means something, but at this, it's really hard. And this is where it goes back to this conversation. You hire your orthopedic doctors and staff and your training staff to be experts in their area. And you have to decide internally, if you're John Schneider or whoever, whether you're going to listen to it or not. Bill Belichick, he was like, I don't really care. You know, it's like, thanks for the information. I'm still going to draft guys. Now, I have two prime examples of both ways. Number one, you know, sadly, I think this is probably the hardest one, but, you know, back when Rob Gronkowski came out, we failed him on his back. We had a D-minus medical. And so we took him from, you know, being a mid upper first to mid second rounder to like fifth or sixth round. Well, should have taken Gronkowski. That one would have been really good. But we also had a kid named Javi Best, who was at Cal, the running back, who had, you know, multiple concussions. And our doctor's like, no, can't take him. They went back and watched the injuries there too. And they can't take him. And he's out of the league in 2 years. And so you just got to decide where you're going to draw the line. Now that I'm older and kind of looking back, I think I'd take the shot on a guy, especially at the quarterback position, just because I don't know how much time you have to be the GM and the head coach, and you've got to have that position. You got to swing at it. And I think you got to explain it to ownership ahead of time. Hey, we realize that there's a landmine here, a pitfall. So that's where I say, Seattle, I don't think you've got to go make the move to get Penix. If he comes to you, great. And then you've got to make that big decision. Schneider has to make it, but I don't think you go and get that guy.
All right, so let's back away from the quarterbacks for a moment. We're talking to Mark Dominic, who, Brock, shame on both of us for not having him on more, because I just really enjoyed
talking
to him.
Well, I've wanted him like 10 different times,
that's
and you're like,
not
no,
true. You're
no,
such a liar. No. How dare you? that's just not right. See, this
that
is what
actually
he
isn't
does.
True.
He
that's not true.
Like this all the
okay,
time.
That is a total lie. Oh, I'll God. Own that. I'm sorry.
Look, can you give me some capsules? I'm going to give you five names of players, or four names of players that we've talked about quite a bit here. That are away from the quarterback position, they could be a fit at number 16. Let me start with Jared Verse.
Yeah, Jared Verse, I love his athleticism. I thought he tested better than what I thought he played on film, which is always a little bit of a concern because I didn't feel like he was going to test that well, and he ran really good and moved around well. He's an unbelievable competitor and a great kid, like a home run as a young man off the field. So you feel very comfortable with all those things you could check off the box. I think you get versatility. You're going to get a guy that I think can play outside and inside and rush the passer. You know, might not be as powerful as Draymond Jones, but might be a little more elusive an athlete. But I mean, I like him as a comparison, but I think Draymond's a little bit longer and more powerful versus a little more athletic and a little more bendy.
How about Byron Murphy?
I think he's a stud. I love this player. I think he's got quick twitch. He's got different rush moves. He certainly can beat you inside on one-on-ones, but he's also able to get small and skinny and split double teams and create a lot of problems. You know, it's interesting. I always felt like this league has never valued TFLs the way it should. TFLs are sacks. And until we start to look at TFLs as the same as sacks and start to like really, you know, support that, I think this guy's a TFL monster, and I think he can be a good sacker. I think he's going to go, though. I think he's the first defensive player off the board.
How about Latu?
Latu, it goes back to the other stuff, right? In terms of a guy that's got a plan and is a rusher, I think he might be the best rusher in this draft class because, you know, not only did he do it in college, but then he went to the Senior Bowl and put on a clinic there for a little bit too. So he just goes back down to the medical too. If you're comfortable enough with the medical, you take this guy and you don't think twice about it because I think you're getting the best pure outside pass rusher in this draft class.
And then Troy Fautanu would be the last one.
Who'd you say? I'm sorry, I just went out.
Sorry, Troy Fautanu from Washington here.
Sure. So Troy, I like Troy okay. I think he's kind of at a different level than those guys. You know, I think he's kind of more of a mid-round type of guy that's going to, you know, you're going to be able to plug and play him and he's going to be able to find a role, but I don't see him as a guy that you're going to put up there in the early rounds whatsoever. I think he's going to be more mid-round, late round.
Interesting. All right. Well, so there you go, Brock.
Well, last thing for me here is what do you think ultimately Schneider does tomorrow or Thursday night? Ultimately, he's got new people around him, right? Ultimately, he's kind of the last one standing between he and Pete and everything else. If you could guess and take a swing at what's going to happen in the war room Thursday night with John at 16, you think he makes a pick? You think he trades down? Or in any realm, if Penix is sitting there at 13, 14, he trades up?
I don't think he trades up. I think if Penix makes it through the gauntlet, guys, that picks the 11, 12, 13 with the Vikings and the Raiders, the Raiders and the Broncos. If Penix makes it through, I think you just sit and wait and see if he comes at you. That's where I see that one. Where I see them doing is I think that they're going to stick with probably the defensive side of the ball, continue to get bigger, more physical pass rushers. As much as I like Wei Mafe and Daryl Taylor, I think that they're going to be looking for another guy that can rush the passer because that's just kind of what you've been doing for years. And I would expect that that's kind of where they're – and I think that's where Latte comes into play, right? I think that's a real possibility there. I think you brought up Burse, who's a possibility there. So I think that speed rusher is kind of in that realm of where they go. I also think that because the tackles are so good, you know, I love Charles Cross, Abraham Lucas. I think that there's a chance third round, you're going to look at them going back in the offensive line again because John's been getting better and better at drafting offensive line, and I think that'll be a big thing. Now, when you said, and I apologize, when you were talking about your big offensive lineman, I was thinking I was getting mixed up.
I had a feeling that was the case. I didn't want to call it. I was like, there's no way he thinks Troy Fautanu is a third-round pick, so I'm just going to let it go, and we'll clear it up later. I figured.
With defensive players, and I couldn't get it out of my head, and I'm like, what are you doing, Mark? Like, you're completely killing yourself. And no, he's a stud. Like he's going to go in the first round for sure. I literally am talking and I'm like, did I just actually say 30? Yeah. So I apologize. Everybody that they can turn back in or tune back on.
Yes.
But no, that guy is an absolute beast. And he's absolutely going in the first round. Are you kidding? He's a stud.
So what do you do? And if you're sitting there at 16 and Fautanu versus Latu are all there.
Penix.
Penix. What do you do?
Okay. So if your coach is comfortable, you take the quarterback and you just swing the bat. Okay. Just because you have to. And again, Brock knows where I sit on Penix. I see Penix more as a late first, early second type of guy, not so much as a mid, but you're not going to get another pick. You're Seattle. You don't have a second, right?
Right.
I think he can go play a guard, right? You can put him inside a guard easily and he could be dominating that guard. And so I feel really good about that. And I think that really kind of solidifies your offensive line. My gut instinct is you go quarterback. I'm a believer quarterback, protect the quarterback, attack the quarterback. That's my fundamental philosophy. So I would take the tackle. I would take Troy if I don't take Penix.
Well, at least we know we're not having to wait to the third round for it. I'm glad we cleared
that.
Thank
goodness. That would have been a good pick. You'd be getting a good A in my post-draft. You're like, wow, you got him in third. Who saw it?
Yes.
Mark, when he goes 14th.
Yeah, yes. Seriously. Well, thank you. This is awesome. No, you're just fine. We totally get it.
You
there's
only
so
have
many names.
10,000 names in your head. Right. So, yeah, totally understand.
Yeah, and by the way, make the mistake here in Seattle today, not on draft day, right? Like, this is the time to kind of get some of those bugs out so that this is a little practice warm-up for you. When you get to Thursday, you're going to be good to go.
Yeah, I got a lot of good radio on Thursday, so it'll be a lot of fun. It's going to be great to be in Detroit and watch the draft. It's always fun to go to the town that's hosting the draft, especially when they have a later pick. It's maybe time for Seattle to get the draft at some point here soon.
Well, we're in. Yeah, yes. Please speak. Yes. Talk that up, because we would love to host the draft here in Seattle. Mark, we appreciate it. Brock, please don't wait so long to have him back. This was a lot of fun. Mark Dominic, thank you so much. We'll talk again.
You bet, guys. On the Troy Fan Club. Don't worry about it.
There you go. There's Mark Dominic. Glad that he came back around on that one, because Faltano is, again, still one of the more likely candidates to be here in Seattle as we're talking about things Friday morning. Okay, we are a day away from the draft. We got a lot more to come on that today. Bump's going to join us a little bit later. Brock's got a couple new thoughts. He's got his last final draft profile to do this morning, and then tomorrow we'll have to open it up to you guys for your draft predictions, etc. So all that will be coming tomorrow. Plus, of course, the race, and Moore and I are getting ourselves ready. I was just doing a little stretching here, no big deal. Just making sure that my hamstrings are loosened up for tomorrow. You know how it goes. Just
very performative.
Was it? I mean, you can say whatever you want. I wore my special Lululemon pants today so that I'd be able to stretch out here. Yeah.
Just play some mind games.
Yeah.
Every hour or so.
Uh-huh. That's right. I'll be in there.
It's looming.
I might start sprinting around the studio running zoomies like my puppy does at some point. All right. Coming up, Mariners win, and they do it exactly the way they're supposed to. It's next on Brock and Salk.